Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 38 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Emily, the Flapper Dame. Welcome back to the show, Emily.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun to talk about this movie because it is so simple yet complex at the same time, and it's just fascinating.
Well, I think that's why it's such a great movie, because it's, as you said, it's simple yet fascinating. Simple yet complex, which makes it fascinating. But yeah, because it's up until then there had been so many World War II movies, but they really didn't get into the guts of it until until this movie came out. You know, they found a way to give more of an emotional punch than many of the other movies did beforehand. I mean, again, there are great World War II movies, and we will talk about them. We'll talk about some of them, in today's segment later at the end of today's episode. But still, I mean, when you look at most of those movies that were made in the late 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, even the 80s, so they most of those movies distance the audience from the action, and this is one of the first movies for dealing with World War II, which basically puts the audience right next to these characters as everything's going on, which gives us more of a feeling that we're connected to what's going on, which is great. Yeah. So minute 38 begins with John sort of starting to complain, and ends with Miller beginning to explain to Horvath the mission. So yesterday we ended things with Miller explaining about their day, the mission that they had to deal with and things like that. And right before yesterday's minute ended, so the Lieutenant Colonel, Anderson, says to him, what was the resistance like? And so Miller started saying, we had higher, and then he was cut off. So today we'll get to hear the rest of that. He basically says, we had higher support expectations, sir. Meaning we had hoped that there would be other troops with us. Support is in this type of situation, so support could be other tanks, other units, maybe bombardment of the area beforehand, or something, from artillery, or maybe even from planes. Who knows? But anyone who knows this movie knows that Miller is the type of officer who gets an order and will follow it through, even if he doesn't agree with it and doesn't think it's the best thing to do. But he will find the best way to try to fulfill that order. And that's what it basically comes down here. So he's sort of griping. I mean, I know that I think next week, or maybe it's in 2 weeks, we'll talk more about griping. But no, I think it's next week. But in this is his mild way of griping to Anderson, saying we had hoped that there would be other units around to help us, but there weren't. And then he continues and says, there was an understrength company without artillery, Wehrmacht 346 infantry, von Luck Kampfgruppe. We ended up with 23 prisoners. We turned them over to the MPs from the 29th. So I actually found it really interesting that he mentions this whole idea of the von Luck Kampfflug, which is something that really threw me off, because I was very curious as to like where that actually comes from. And do you have any idea?
You're talking about the Kampfgruppe?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, that was I actually took German in school for 3 years. Ich kann klein Deutsch sprechen. that I can speak a little German because of that. So the Kampfgruppe, it's the fighting group, and the Wehrmacht, the defense force, it actually replaced the Reichswehr. That's the German army, or the military. I think, yeah.
Right. So, but did you look up anything specifically about the Wannlack Kampfgruppe?
Not specifically about that, no.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't know this until I started doing research for it. So, first of all, the idea of a Kampfgruppe is known as a fighting group or a battle group. It was some type of German combat formation. It was used for any different kind. Like you said, it was mostly used by the Wehrmacht in Nazi Germany, and the allies of the Axis at the time, and it was also used by the German Empire during World War I.
Yes.
So the idea was is it was a combined arms formation that usually employed a combination of tanks, infantry, and artillery, including anti-tank elements, that were organized to and given a specific task or operation. Now the sizes varied. It sometimes was a company size or a corps size, but they mostly use the idea of a battalion-sized formation to try to get that. And they would actually refer to this Kampfgruppen by the name of the commanding officer. Okay, which is why he says it was the Wannlack Kampfgruppe, because there is a famous German officer whose name was Hans Wannlack. His full name was Hans Ulrich Freiherr Wannlack und Witten. He was born on the 15th of July, 1911, and lived to the ripe old age and died on August 1st, 1997, which means that he
Oh.
was 86 when he died, which means he survived World War II. He authored a book called Panzer Commander, and he was in charge of the 7th Panzer Division and the 21st Panzer Division, during the course of the war. He himself participated in the invasion of Poland on September 1st, 1939. He was a company commander in a reconnaissance battalion. And he was also part of the invasion of the Soviet Union. He was part of the headquarters staff of the 3rd Panzer Group that was used to move into Lithuania and then Minsk, and to try and cut off the Russians. And they moved towards Moscow during their during their conquest, stuff like that. And he actually was requested by Rommel to join him in Africa, and then he was moved to Africa to start working there doing stuff. He was promoted to major in 1942, and then at that point he assumed command of the 3rd Panzer Reconnaissance Battalion of the 21st Panzer Division. Then during Normandy, so he was before Normandy, he was sent to be an instructor, a tank instructor in a school in a military academy in Paris, training the soldiers. And he was eventually moved to the 21st Panzer Division, which was commanded by a man named Edgar Feuchtinger, and then he was in charge of the 125th Panzer Regiment at the time. And During the invasion of Normandy, he received all these different orders, all these different reports about paratroopers landing around his area and stuff like that. And he requested permission to attack, but he was denied that permission to do it because they weren't able to do so without permission of the high command. Now, I mean, I don't know if you told me that you saw The Longest Day, right?
Yes.
Right. So in The Longest Day, that's one of the things they kept talking about, the fact that the high command was not around, so they weren't able to get permission. Like, if I remember correctly, nobody wanted to wake up Hitler, to find out, if they can, counterattack and things like that. But on June 9th, they designated his unit as the Kampfgruppe von Lock, and he was he had a battalion with three assault gun batteries and one anti-tank company with 88 guns, and using this force, he was supposed to assault the Orne bridges and recapture them from the British paratroopers. And basically, they advanced on the village of Ranville, basically getting the British line, the Brits to try to get the Brits out of that area. But he wasn't able to reach the bridges in the end, because the British paratroopers were reinforced by another division that he didn't expect to do it. But the only thing that they were able to do then was to tie up the British units and keep them there, that they had to, they couldn't go elsewhere because his unit was fighting them. Now, what's very interesting is that obviously nothing here is mentioned of the Americans. So,
Yeah.
on the one hand, it's nice that they throw in this real the name of a real commander and the things that he was doing, besides the fact that it's complete. I mean, again, the whole movie is as you said earlier this week, it's a fictional account of something that happened in a real event, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But it's just very funny that they would, specifically mention the Kampfgruppe von Lock as opposed to, it was something that was fought with, that it was a battle with the Brits on this exact day that this scene is taking place. So, I just find that very, very interesting that, unless someone will do the research like we're doing here, you won't know that information. You'll automatically assume that, okay, if there really was a guy named Von Lock, so, there must be some accuracy to, so there's accuracy that Von Lock was fighting there on that morning, just not with Miller and his Rangers. That's what it comes down to. He actually surrendered to the Soviet forces in 1945, and he was sent to a forced labor camp in Georgia, Georgia. It was basically a gulag, and he was there till 1949 when he was sent back to West Germany. Years later, as I mentioned before, he wrote his he became very close friends with Stephen Ambrose,
Oh.
who is the writer of Band of Brothers, and who was an inspiration for this movie. Ambrose was the one who encouraged von Luck to write his memoirs in a book that was known as Panzer Commander. So, okay, that makes a lot of sense as to why they would throw that, throw his name in here.
Yes.
Interesting. Anderson says to Miller, okay, he says, what about our casualties? He goes, well, the figures were, and like then he pulls out a piece of paper from his pocket. Miller takes a piece of paper out of his pocket and starts looking at the information. And then he goes, well, the figures were 35 dead times two wounded, so 70 wounded and 35 dead. And he says, they just didn't want to give up those 88s. So, I mean, it's interesting that he's coming to this report, that give this report to Anderson, and he knows that he needs to write down their idea of, the list of casualties type of thing. And he even small numbers like that, he's not remembering. He doesn't want to trust his own memory on that type of thing. He wants to be able to do it, read it from somewhere where he knows the figures are accurate. And then Anderson says to him, "Well, it was a tough assignment. That's why you got it." And he goes, "Yes, sir." And then Anderson then says to him, he goes, "John, I've got another one for you." And he goes, "Yes, sir. This one's straight from the top." Now, I love the way that they do this because, you know, just this the way that this conversation goes, they show that there is some sort of bond or friendship between these two men. Just the idea that Anderson starts calling him John means he knows who he is. And he knows how hard he has been fighting over the last, 3 days. And wants to give him, I guess, a little bit of a break. Even though when you think about it, this mission that they're giving him is not a simple mission, but it's not your typical mission that most of the commanders at that time had to fulfill.
Yes.
You know, that type of thing. So I like the way that they present that. And Miller, just agrees to it. You know, again, it goes back to what I was saying about earlier. He's the type of officer that you give him an order, give him a command, and that's what he's going to go do. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. He's going to try and find the best way to do it and not argue and just, take the information as it's being given. And then the shot changes and we once again see a whole bunch of soldiers, lots of them walking in the background, in the foreground, in front of, in the middle ground also. Like throughout this entire shot has soldiers moving back and forth. A whole bunch of different, in many different places. There are troop carriers that are going by and stuff like that. See, it's a very busy scene. And then we hear voices, and we then hear Miller say, "You and I are taking a squad over to Newville on a public relations mission." And one of the things I love about the way that they film this scene is that, you know, here we have all these soldiers moving back and forth on, you know, around the entire shot. And then as this is going on, we see Horvath and Miller walk towards us. You know, they were just, they were basically crossing the street as they were having that conversation. But the shot continues panning and showing us all these various soldiers as they're trying to figure out, what they need to do at this point. You know, we don't know who's, the assumption is that most of these are not Miller's men, but it's just great the way that they have that all happen there.
Yes.
And then Horvath basically then says to Miller, and he goes, "You leading a squad?" And then Miller starts to explain the premise of the movie and says, "Some private in the 101st. And then he gets cut off with what he's saying. I like the way that they present this to us, and it shows part of the chaos of everything that's going on, but also the amount of how busy everything was at that point. You know, just to show us again, I don't know if chaos is the right word, but it's to show everything that's going on here. You know, here you have these two characters that are in the middle of thousands upon thousands of other characters that are dealing with this type of stuff here. And I like the way that they present that to us. And it's just very, very, very cool.
It is. It really is. And the fact that, again, they're keeping the background moving. I mean, all of this could have been done in like a little tent area with just the two of them talking. But no, it's chosen to do outside. Oh, well, out in the open. It's all outside.
Right.
Out in the open with people moving, things happening. And it's just, it's a fascinating moving piece of film. And it's just so fascinating to look at.
Right.
Again,
I think they're also trying to show us the grandeur of, you know, how many men are there.
Yes.
You know, this invasion force is fully packed, I guess you can say. Now, he mentions the fact that they are going to Newville, right? They're being sent to Newville. And I decided to look up what is Newville. Now I don't know if this is the my assumption is this is the same Newville, but what I found about it was that on June 6th, 1944, Newville was actually one of the objectives of the 505th Infantry Regiment, the 82nd Airborne Division, during the invasion, and they captured the area early in the day with just 42 men, and it was led by First Lieutenant Turnbull, who was actually killed the following day by an artillery shell. And he and his men were left there to defend the area. And the counterattack after a few days was this by a heavy German force. And more than half of the men that were there to defend it were either killed or wounded during an 8-hour battle. And basically, there were two men that volunteered to stay there to let all the others try and get away. One of them was named Corporal James Kelly, and the other one was Sergeant Robert Nyland. So we talked about this last week also, but Robert Nyland was one of the Nyland brothers, who is part of the inspiration for this movie and its premise. Because Robert Nyland was actually killed, when the German forces came to came at them as they were helping all their comrades, get away. So again, I've mentioned this before, but Robert Nyland was killed on June 6th. It was actually on D-Day itself. He and Corporal Kelly were manning a machine gun, and Nyland was killed, and Kelly managed to somehow survive through that. Again, last week we talked about the Nyland brothers, so you can get more information about them, by listening once again to last week if you missed it or if you don't remember, one of those things. But because part of the whole thing was is that they thought that they had all died, and apparently in the end only two of them died on during the D-Day battles. Here we have Robert Nyland, who died on June 6th, and then the following day his brother Preston died on June 7th. And that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guests will give their top five World War II movies. So
Okay, well,
once again, start with your number five and work your way up. And I'm very curious to know what you're going to talk about here.
number five is a different sort of war movie. Since you went away, I know some people will say that doesn't even count, but I think it shows the American home front. And I chose that movie as a tribute to my great aunt Virginia, who was what my grandfather called he could never talk about World War II without mentioning his sister, who constantly sent him food, socks, underwear, cigarettes, just like coffee and just care packages for both my grandfather and his brother. And he would always say, talk about his sister. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Allies were able to be successful, because they had support from
Because
their
of your
home
great
country.
aunt.
They had support from they had support from the home front. Like you think about Britain and their war effort, like all the Allied nations at home, the home front worked together, whereas like in Italy and Japan, they didn't have support from the home front. They didn't have people rationing or anything like that. Not that I've ever read about or anything. They didn't really do anything like that. But so since you went away, number four, the Dirty Dozen. I think it may not be the most accurate, but it's certainly one of the most fun movies. The ending with, I think Lee Marvin just powering through all everything that he had to go through, and then him survive, even though he's kind of injured, him just surviving is, I get a kick out of that. It again, maybe not the most accurate, but it's fun. Number three, Sands of Iwo Jima. That movie, the first time every time I watch it, it's like John Wayne. I think he's just so brilliant in it. And I think he could have gotten an Oscar for that if things were different. The fact that he didn't get the award is kind of shocking. Number two, The Great Escape. The Great Escape is just a great movie. It's star-studded, but I love that movie. James Garner is in it. Steve McQueen is in it. And even though, again, that's inaccurate because the Americans actually didn't participate in digging the tunnels like that, but it was Canadians and British, but it's just really fun to watch. But number one.
Yeah, well, before you get to number one, just to quickly mention, so, a little plug for myself. So anyone who wants to hear more about The Great Escape, that was my season one. So you can go back and listen to the 175 episodes of season one, where, we broke down every episode, every minute of The Great Escape, 1 minute at a time. And we also had an interview with the late, great David McCallum, who gave us his thoughts on the, behind the scenes of the movie and of, about even his thoughts about his wife at the time, Jill Ireland, who met Charles Bronson on the set, and how that affected their lives also. It's it's great to go back and listen to that interview if anyone's interested. Right. Okay. I interrupted you before you were going to your number one.
That's just so cool. I didn't realize that.
You see, now you have something you can go back and listen to. You can listen to not just the whole season, but you can just listen also to the interview if you're interested.
Yes. Today, because there's so many World War II movies and there's so many good ones out there, but I love Mr. Roberts. That's what I'm putting as number one right at this moment. That cast, and I know that none of the cast really thought the movie was all that great because they thought the stage play was better, but I mean, none of us lived to see Henry Fonda in the stage production, so this is just as close as we can get to seeing what he would have been like on stage in the original run. But Mr. Roberts is just great. They call it a war movie for people who don't like war movies. Like, if you're a skeptic, you could start there, because it's more so a comedy of sorts. But I love, and then William Powell and James Cagney, Jack Lemmon, Henry Fonda, that cast is stacked of just great actors in a great script. I love Mr. Roberts.
Yes, it's a very fun movie. I mean, I came across it years ago and was surprised at how enjoyable it was. Even when you see Jack Lemmon in a supporting role at that point, it's just a great story. Really enjoyed that. All right, excellent. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So, Emily, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Okay, so I am on my film blog at theflapperdamefilm.wordpress.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at flapperdame16, and I'm on YouTube under the Flapper Dame, parentheses Emily G.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to shoot me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this.
My solitude, you.